The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Welcome to How to Survive with Danielle and Christine, a show where we teach you how to survive the things that might kill you.
Like plane crashes or crocodiles or cults.
Absolutely, and the stuff that just makes you wish you were dead.
Like being late for your own wedding, or getting food caught in your teeth, or family secrets.
Whew. Shaking in my boots.
Shaking in your boots. We better play the song.
Ground is shaking under our feet. Mountains on fire, flooding in the street. Can't breathe the air, can't fight the feeling. Gobbling down Xanax.
Good morning! Welcome to How to Survive with Danielle and Christine. I'm Danielle.
I love that I now suddenly feel like I'm on a radio show.
Well, who are you? I'm Danielle.
Oh, I'm Christine.
Yeah. And? Oh, for God's sake.
You got me in my heels. I'm Garen.
I had to get you on your heels. I was telling Christine when I came in that I wake up every day with like a sense of dread, like, well, gotta do life again today. It's just my, natural disposition. And then I put the word death in my Wordle today. So that's kind of where I'm at. But I've had coffee, so I'm also a little giddy. So I'm both.
It. So you,
I'm
you
all
got over
aspects
it.
Of me. Oh, I guess until the next time.
You know what I'm impressed by? People who don't wake up with a sense of dread.
Like, I don't understand people who are generally, I'm so envious of those people. And I don't think it's like a matter of changing your perspective. I mean, maybe it is, but I've tried, I've read things. I think you come into this world with a certain kind of disposition.
Yes.
And it doesn't mean you can't improve and change your circumstances, of course. But I just I just got generations upon generations of
trauma.
Trauma's dramatic, but negativity and depression.
Yeah, I mean, I think some people, I have clinical depression and I take medication for it and I'm not ashamed.
No,
But my husband doesn't.
Right.
He wakes up in a good mood.
Yeah.
And he goes to all of us and gives us kisses and tells us he loves us and is like chipper.
But then I feel bad for our respective husbands because
I think they were the yin and the yang. I mean, they picked us to bring
they
them.
They wanted some depression in their lives.
They didn't want to be too happy.
Well, check and check.
We got you covered.
You're not too happy.
Speaking of nothing that we just talked about.
Yes. Segue.
I've got a whopper.
I know. I'm very excited about this topic.
So we've all got our favorites. NXIVM, Manson, Scientology, Rajneesh Purim.
Yep.
That's from Wild Wild Country.
Yep.
In case you didn't know. Heaven's Gate.
Yes.
You've got the People's Temple. I mean, I could just go on and on.
Yes.
We're talking about cults.
Cults. How to survive a cult.
What makes a cult, Danielle?
Well, should I? Do you want an actual answer or are you going to give it to me?
I can tell you.
You tell me.
I mean, if Hillary Clinton drinks smoothies from an aborted fetus, are you in a cult? If you think that.
If you are part of the, you mean if you sign up to do it with her?
Like if you think.
Or if you just think it. Yes, like, I think you're in a cult.
If you think Bill Gates puts a microchip in the vaccine, are you in a cult?
Yeah. Cult of thought. Thought cult.
Thought cult. Mind control. So I found this excellent piece of writing, actually in Oprah Daily. I don't know what that is. Oprah. I don't know why I said actually, as if Oprah's website wouldn't have good writing. By Womanade's. What?
Womanade? What'd you say? Center? Social?
By a woman
named
Samantha Vicente. Thank you, Samantha. And it's going to help us spot the warning signs of a cult. So I'm going to drop some of that knowledge on you.
Okay.
So you can tell if you or a loved one are in fact in danger of a cult.
Okay.
So I'm going to give you the Merriam-Webster definition of a cult as both the great devotion to a person, idea, object, movement, or work, and as a religion regarded as unorthodox or spurious.
Okay.
That's two different.
So yeah.
The U.S. keeps no formal log of every alleged cult in the country. Up to 10,000 cults currently exist today, according to Steve Eichel of the International Cultic Studies Association.
10,000?
Yeah.
Internationally.
Nationally.
In the country. In the country.
Jeez Louise. Okay.
So a lot of documentaries to look forward to.
I mean, I think I've seen at least a third of those.
Get your Netflix queue ready. Steve Hassan, the author of Combating Cult Mind Control, The Guide to Protection, Rescue, and Recovery from Destructive Cults. He's also a former member of Sun Myung Moon's Unification Church cult, which I think is the Moonies, right?
That's absolutely the Moonies.
So he says what really matters is what differentiates a benign cult from a destructive cult, which is obviously the one you want to watch out for. They're healthy cults in the sense that you know what you're getting into.
Okay.
He uses the example of like the great followers of the Grateful Dead. For example,
okay.
Like they don't control who you talk to. They don't control what you read. They answer your questions honestly.
They just make you intolerable.
Yeah.
To deal with.
You smell like patchouli and you have to get one of those bear tattoos.
Oh, that dancing bear.
Yeah.
Why does that depress me so much, that dancing bear?
I don't know. Well, I feel like if you see someone and their pant leg slips up and you see that bear tattooed on their ankle.
Run to the hills.
You're like, I got a lot of information just about you.
Their pant legs. Of course it's on their leg.
Of course it is. It's on their ankle.
Oh, God.
With that in mind,
yes.
Here's some warning signs of a cult to watch out for.
Okay,
so Steve Hassan, who I just mentioned, he uses something called the BITE model, which is an extensive list of common methods in four major categories. So BITE stands for behavior, information, thought, and emotional control.
Okay.
So with mind control cults, there's that hook. You think you're going to improve your life or save children. Who wouldn't want to save the children?
Right.
And then there's incremental disclosure about what the group is actually about. They only tell you what you think you're ready to swallow. It's kind of like Scientology, right? Where they like, you get a little bit more information, the more money you give them. And then at the very end, you're like, wait, so these aliens come down? And what?
They've been planted into people and something about a volcano and page 57.
And then by then they've got all your secrets and you've paid all this money and you're like, oh.
Yeah, that's probably the most obvious form of that because you're right. It's literally a progression.
Yeah. And it's been years.
Yeah.
So while you're getting indoctrinated, your critical faculties are getting worn away. That might be through hypnosis, food or sleep deprivation. Or forcing them to cut off contact with friends and family, which is a very common tactic. Here's a small sampling of the many practices that are listed under each subcategory. Okay, you can also go online and read his full BITE model if you are concerned. Behavior control. So they regulate your diet through forced fasting.
Mm.
They manipulate a person and deprive them of sleep. So we saw some of this in Nexium.
A lot of this.
In The Vow, if any of you have not seen The Vow.
The food control and then the volleyball games at 3 in the morning.
Information control. They minimize or discourage access to non-cult sources of information, TV, internet, former members, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
They make extensive use of cult-generated information and propaganda. Okay, there's a lot more, but I'm going to just read a few. Emotional control. They manipulate and narrow the range of feelings. Some emotions and or needs are deemed as evil, wrong, or selfish. They make the person feel that the problems are always their own fault, never the leader's or the group's fault. Again, that makes me think of Nexium, where he would take the women on the walks at night in that little cul-de-sac, that weird place they lived, that I was like, this is the worst
like weird suburbia
place to be in a cult. Pick somewhere nicer. Jesus.
I know, there should at least be greenery around.
I know, it's so depressing. And tell the women how it was like, you're failing.
Yeah, maybe you're not trying hard enough.
Exactly. And
why was all of that filmed? Oh, because they were making a movie.
They were making a documentary, right?
Right.
Okay. I just did that. Emotional control, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Do your research. Be wary of any group that can't give you straight answers to questions, telling you you'll learn more after giving, paying for achieving something.
Right.
Right? Okay. Here's something interesting. Hassan points out that any web-savvy organization can game their site or their multiple sites so that they flood the top page of your Google search results. For example, the site New Cult Awareness Network sounds like a watchdog group, but it's actually owned and operated by the Church of Scientology.
Jesus Christ. So it probably says all the cults are bad except for Scientology.
So yeah, keep that in mind. It's like that. Have you seen that place on, I think it's on Hollywood or Melrose, that says like psychiatry kills.
Yes.
And it's the Museum of Psychiatry.
Yeah.
And it's a Scientology
building.
And they get you in there and they're like, would you like to have a, what's it called? An audit?
Yeah.
Yeah. Ask for the proof. Another common cult tactic is to deflect skepticism over their beliefs by placing the burden of proof on others to disprove it. So this is interesting to me. They'll say an online claim that top-ranking government, like I'll say to you, Danielle, did you know that everyone in charge of the government are lizard people?
How can you prove that?
No, I say you prove they're not.
Oh.
So you, as me in the cult,
right.
I'm putting the burden on you to disprove my insane statement.
Right. Then I look like a crazy person because I'm trying to disprove that there are lizard people in the government.
Yes. And that's what, you see that a lot with the whole like Pizzagate stuff.
Yeah.
Where it's like, no, prove they're not.
Right. And, like, and then you do. And then it still doesn't matter.
Yeah. They're like, oh, well, it's still true.
Right.
Fact check the cult leader. Do they go by their birth name? It's not.
Well, that's half the people in Hollywood.
It's true. But, well, that's its own cult.
Yeah, that's its own cult, I guess.
Why'd they change it? Are there any lawsuits? Do they have criminal records? Have they been involved in previous multi-level marketing schemes? Check every fact listed in their bio to see if they are who they say they are.
Do they get way too many women in relation to how attractive they are?
Again, I think we're talking about Hollywood.
Yeah, well, that's true, too. That's a good point.
Be aware of your own vulnerability. What plays on one person's fears and vulnerabilities won't work on someone else with a different life experience. But Hassan insists that something will work on everyone if they're not properly educated.
Like how to start a cult. Keep trying. You'll find something else.
Yeah, I mean, this is also a guide on how to start a cult.
Okay,
perfect. It's kind of both. Okay, how fast does it take to get someone recruited? 10 seconds if the right variables are in place, he says. So it's like if someone came up to you and said, Danielle, so I've got this free workshop you can take, and it's going to get you a gig staffed on the reboot of Cheers.
Okay, I see your point.
And you
see how anyone could fall for it.
You're going to be writing, well, for Ted.
Right. Specifically.
And all you have to do, the workshop's free.
Right.
And then you take it. You're like, yeah, I want that to happen.
Right.
And then they're like, okay, so you did great in the free workshop. The next one, you just have to take one more.
Right.
This one's $10,000.
But you're guaranteed happiness at the end of this.
So they find out what people's you know, deepest desires right. are.
And usually it's something very general, like self-awareness, peace, yes. you know, wealth.
Feel better about yourself.
Right.
And I think they do tend to seek out vulnerable people.
Yeah, i.e. dum-dums.
Yeah.
Right.
And not always dum-dums, actually. It's a lot.
Is not the right word.
It's actually a lot of times really intelligent people, but
they say that, but how, I mean, come on. Is it though?
I think people can be intelligent
and
also
vulnerable
at the same time.
I know, but like, how many documentaries do you have? Like, I could see it happening a long time ago, but like, how many times do these things have to be exposed before people pick up on it?
Yeah, I guess there's just a lot of people who are damaged.
Yeah.
I would say.
Sorry if I'm being insensitive to cult members.
No, it's okay. Keep drinking your coffee.
Wow. That was so condescending for no reason. That was like as if I'm like you just got me. Like I'm in the cult of coffee drinkers. Is that what you meant?
No, I thought it might like cheer you up a little bit.
Keep drinking your coffee, sourpuss.
Okay.
Whatever. Drinking your coffee.
Keep drinking your coffee. I'll do the show.
Yeah.
No, I meant like, I think you are just not quite awake yet.
Oh, well, you know how you get awake. Join a cult. Yeah.
Has someone in your life started spouting theories and beliefs that seem not just absurd, but also wildly out of character?
Yes.
Hassan says...
Is that true?
Yeah.
Like a relative?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hassan says the stress and uncertainty of our current social, economic, and political situations stoked by disinformation that's amplified on social media unchecked has put all of our defenses down.
Yeah.
Which leads me to a whole new way cults can recruit. Used to be, you know, they could just throw you in a van.
Yeah, right.
Right? With shag carpet, like all Scooby-Doo style. And
you
next thing you know.
Scooby-Doo were kidnappers?
Well, I'm saying the van, similar.
The van is used. It's a mystery.
I don't know what Scooby-Doo was doing when on their downtime.
Yeah, maybe they were starting a cult.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
You know, and then next thing you know, you're like, oh, I'm this guy's 14th wife.
Right.
Now,
next thing you know.
Next thing
bing,
you know.
Bam, boom. Next thing you know, you're this guy's 14th wife.
Now cult leaders don't even need to leave their house. I'm going to talk about the most significant and frightening cultic phenomenon to arise from social media.
Cultic. Okay.
This is from The New Yorker. I didn't use that word.
I love it. I'd never heard of it. It's great.
QAnon.
Yes.
So, according to some observers, the QAnon movement does not qualify as a proper cult because it lacks a single charismatic leader.
Ah.
Donald Trump is a hero of the movement.
Right.
But not its controller.
But some people think he is. Some of the members think he is the leader.
True. It's very murky.
Yeah.
Q, the online presence whose Q drops form the basis of the QAnon mythology, is considered a leader of sorts. But the army of gurus and promoters who decode, interpret, and embroider Q's utterances have shown themselves perfectly capable of generating doctrine and inciting violence in the absence of Q's directives. It's possible that our traditional definition. Yeah. So it's like what they're saying in this. This is a great piece in New Yorker magazine called What Makes a Cult, by the way. So they're saying that our traditional definitions of what constitutes a cult organization will have to adapt to the internet age and a new model of crowdsourced cult. A survey published in May by the Public Religion Research Institute found that 15% of Americans subscribe to the central QAnon belief that the government is run by a cabal of Satan-worshipping pedophiles, and that 20% believe that there is a storm coming soon that will sweep away the elites in power and restore the rightful leaders.
Okay.
That's a lot of fucking people.
So how did Trump get elected if there's a cabal of Democrat baby eaters who... You know, like, how did that even happen then? Was that the storm?
Again.
The short-lived storm?
You're using
logic. I know.
And we can't use logic to these belief systems. It's like trying to apply logic to religion. They're two different things.
Right.
Yet anxiety about the movement tends to be undercut by laughter at the presumed imbecility of its members. Some of the attorneys representing QAnon followers who took part in the invasion of the Capitol have even made this their chief line of defense. Albert Watkins, who represents Jacob Chansley, the bare-chested Q shaman, recently told a reporter that his client and other defendants were people with brain damage. They're fucking R-word.
Oh. That's what his lawyer said?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I just didn't want to say it.
Got it. No, no, no.
It's an ugly word, but...
Yeah. His own lawyer said
yes.
that.
Yes. Well, it is the best defense. I mean, I don't mean using that word, but I mean, yeah, they're idiots who were brainwashed and... yeah. So well, we don't want to take responsibility away from them, but it is a smart defense.
Yeah. No, he's I don't know. Mike Rothschild, in his book about the QAnon phenomenon, The Storm Is Upon Us, argues that contempt and mockery for QAnon beliefs have led people like us to radically underestimate the movement. And even now, keep us from engaging seriously with its threat. I think it's very threatening. I'm scared about it.
Well, my original take was, why are we giving these people air? Because it's so stupid and so ridiculous. But that was before, obviously, we saw, you know, the storming of the Capitol and all the other, I'm going to call them shenanigans.
Okay.
All the other shenanigans they've engaged in.
Well, here's something. The bad news is you're unlikely to talk them out of their beliefs.
Right.
Which I think we all know that about. When people have strongly held beliefs, you're not usually going to talk them out of them. The good news is that rational objections to flaws in cult doctrine or to hypocrisies on the part of the cult leader do have a powerful impact if and when they occur to the cult members themselves.
So right.
when they see it themselves.
Right.
Rothschild interviews several QAnon followers who became disillusioned after noticing a dangling thread that once pulled unraveled the whole tapestry of QAnon lore. Sometimes it's a fact remembered from grade school that unlocks the door to sanity.
Huh.
I thought this was an interesting tidbit. So one of the former Scientologists interviewed in Alex Gibney's documentary, Going Clear, reports that after a few years in the organization, she experienced her first inklings of doubt when she read L. Ron Hubbard's account of an intergalactic overlord exploding A-bombs in Vesuvius and Etna 75 million years ago. The detail that aroused her suspicions wasn't especially outlandish. Whoa, she remembers thinking, I studied geography in school. Those volcanoes didn't exist 75 million years ago.
I was going to say, it wasn't 75 million years ago.
So it's that thing that is a little frustrating is people will say like, well, you have to educate them, but they have to be open to it.
Right.
It's that thing where it's like talking about people getting sober, where you're like, you can't necessarily force them into sobriety if they're not ready.
That's interesting that a fact is what made her question it.
Yeah.
Because usually I would just think the response would be, well, what you learned in your grade school books is wrong.
Right. Yeah.
So, but that's interesting.
I do have some tips, though, on how to get someone out of a cult.
I love it.
Would you like to hear them?
I do.
Okay. Do everything you can to stay in touch.
Right.
Okay. If you're trying to persuade someone to leave a cult, supply reminders of the world beyond it by calling, emailing, writing letters. Nobody writes letters anymore. Sending photographs and maybe even visiting. Although anyone can get lured into a cult, you should visit only if you feel strong enough to resist. This is from a woman named Yanya Lelich, a sociology professor and a consultant. She studies cults. Don't try to forcibly remove someone, even if you're gravely concerned. So they used to do this in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. They'd get these deprogrammers and they'd kidnap and hold cult members against their will.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So that often worked, but abduction is illegal.
Yeah.
So the techniques were discredited after a Washington man successfully sued his deprogrammer. So now they're saying the preferred method is exit counseling. So they just renamed it, but you don't kidnap someone. You require, you get therapists, lawyers, friends, and families. It's more like an intervention.
Right.
So you try to get some one-on-one time with the person. Don't harp. Don't nag them about their cult.
Look, leave me alone about my cult.
My cult's
it's my
cool.
life. I'll cult if I want to.
Exactly. It may take up to 5 years for the person to figure out who they are again. So be gentle with them.
This is if they get out of the cult?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
So yeah, it's
hard.
That's the thing you get from that Leah Remini show is it's just such a process because part of them is still, which makes sense.
Yeah.
Part of them is still connected in some way to that.
Well, I read a lot of stories from people who got out of cults. And one of the things that I kept coming across again and again were that one woman said she related so much to the Kimmy Schmidt show because of the sort of fish out of water where she just didn't know how to relate to the world because she had been so shut off from everything.
That's
and
great.
Another person said Forrest Gump where it was like he just didn't connect to the world at all. Right. Like it felt like such a foreign place to him. So it does take a lot of time for them to figure out how to even be in the world. It's like being Amish in a way.
And you're probably also very suspicious of everyone.
Yes.
Because you've been taught to be suspicious. And this thing you put your trust in, you've just realized is criminal and evil. And so how can you trust anyone again?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I'm going to talk about a cult that is called the Fellowship of Friends. Have you heard of it?
I don't know. I don't think so.
So it wasn't always known as a dangerous cult. For a time, the organization was primarily renowned as a maker of world-class natural wine.
Okay.
Their Renaissance brand has been raved about as a special age-worthy one-of-a-kind wine at the very top tier of what California can produce.
Oh.
Here in the Yucca Valley. And you can still get it. So there's a Spotify podcast called Revelations that gets into this whole doomsday cult. So if you want to listen to it.
Yes.
And it's produced by this guy, Jennings Brown. He spent 3 years researching this group, visited the compound, spoke with ex-members. And so check it out. Robert Earl Burton, born in 1939, is a former Arkansas school teacher who reinvented himself in the 1970s as a California guru. He studied the teachings of a self-help movement called the Fourth Way, the idea that one should immerse oneself in the finer things in life, abolish negative thinking, and live in harmony with dictates given to Burton by his 44 angels.
Oh.
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay.
Right? I mean,
so specific.
I want 44 angels telling me about the good life. He claimed these angels, a who's who of historical greats, including Leonardo da Vinci, William Shakespeare, Dante Alighieri, and Benjamin Franklin. I mean, first of all white guys. Right?
Right.
It's a little... Gave him instructions.
Dante was Italian.
Oh, thank you. Yes. I mean, probably one of those guys was gay. Gave him instructions on how his followers should live. Every so often, his angels predicted apocalypse. Burton instructed followers to fund his ever-expanding Galleria, a collection of largely Western European artwork he claimed would one day rekindle civilization. So he had these bizarre demands. This is in the 70s. Athletic activity, humor, eyeglasses,
oh, no.
Mixed breed pets, and using the word I were all forbidden.
Wait a second. Yeah. I misunderstood.
Okay.
Humor is forbidden.
Yeah.
Eyeglasses are forbidden.
Yes. Mixed breed pets.
Mongrels.
Yes.
Okay. That's got to be some sort of
athletic
white
activity.
Supremacist thing.
Yeah.
Athletic activity is banned.
Yes.
And then and using the word I?
Yep.
Okay.
Women deemed spiritually inferior allegedly were forbidden from getting pregnant.
Okay.
So he dictated that any member who got pregnant had to terminate.
Any member?
Well, yeah.
So none of the women are spiritually clean.
No. And so men would come with their wives because they were in thrall of him.
Yeah.
And if their wives got pregnant, he forced them to get abortions.
So how would he get more cult members if, I mean, this is like cult 101. You want to grow the cult.
I think he, okay, so I'm going to give you some
or
more.
Or maybe he was just well-meaning. He was a forced abortionist.
I think he really was just interested in getting the men.
Oh.
So here's where we're going. This is the direction we're going. Meanwhile, despite condemning homosexuality, Burton was allegedly preying on young, attractive male followers.
Okay, here we go.
Always targeting straight men.
Right.
Many ex-members speak to Brown in the podcast about the alleged abuse, some of them giving firsthand accounts of being victimized, and others who knew what was going on, including a woman who was Burton's housekeeper for years. In 1996, a lawsuit was filed by a former member who alleged Burton sexually exploited him when he was 17. And it turns out even his dad was, the 17-year-old's dad was also...
Exploited
by him. And then just all these men started coming forward. It was one of those things where it was like, yeah, he did this to me too.
So basically, like, he just wasn't comfortable being gay, so he started a cult.
I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, I think a lot of
this
cults
is what
begin with men who are like, I want to have sex with as many people as I want.
Right.
And I can't figure out how to do it. How do I do this? I'll start a cult.
Right.
It's so much about sexual exploitation when it all...
So gross.
It all boils down to sexual exploitation. The suit was settled out of court. Okay. Then... U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement investigated a tip that the fellowship was bringing non-U.S. citizens into the country and paying for their religious visas, intending for the recruits to be in sexual servitude to Burton.
Jesus.
So he was like, all right, I got to figure out how to get more men in. So he was bribing them with these religious visas.
Right. I didn't know that was a thing, a religious visa.
They didn't know what they were in for. That started to become under scrutiny. So then he started getting more men from Eastern Europe, like Romania and Russia.
Okay.
So
I'm just trying to get over the fact that you're not allowed to have a cockapoo. Like, no labradoodles for you.
Yeah. I mean,
so specific.
Purebreds.
All
I feel
the way.
Like he was surrounded by those giant poodles.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Standard poodle.
You got to look at a picture of him and you'll say,
okay.
For sure. So
he just has a disco ball following him all the place. I hate homosexuality. Oh, okay. So Garen just showed me a picture
yes.
of him. He's very natty. Is that what they say about well-dressed? Like he's wearing like a suit and a yellow suit and a hat.
I'm going to use a really old reference, yeah. But who's the guy from the Gilligan's Island?
The millionaire?
Yes.
Mr. Howell.
Yeah, he's very Mr. Howell.
Yeah.
There is at least one main difference between the Fellowship and Nexium, though. This group is still in operation.
Whoa!
So, if you see Renaissance wine on your shelf, know what you are buying.
How fascinating.
Yeah.
He's never been brought up on charges? He's dead at this point?
He's still alive. I think he's like 80-something. He was born in 1939.
39, so he'd be 83.
So, the winery is still in business, as far as I know. The Fellowship 24. Is... I mean, you can go to his website and it lists his books and his biography.
Huh.
And
so I wonder why maybe there was a statute of limitations.
And the religion, it says, according to the chief financial officer, Charles Randall, who they talked to in the podcast, it says, we made up the religion to cover the fact that it was otherwise Robert doing whatever the hell he wanted.
So it's interesting. Like these guys get involved and then at some point the light clicks up. You know, clicks on, they realize what's going on, but they're still there.
Yeah.
Because maybe they don't know any other life or they're just as corrupt as he is, or it's just so sick.
Yeah. So,
but apparently he produces a damn fine bottle of wine.
I mean, it's apparently in the natural wine world, it's a very good wine. And I wonder if I've ever bought this Renaissance wine. And I'm going to be looking now on the shelf to see. I'm not going to buy it because I don't want to give any more money to this guy.
No.
But.
That's so crazy.
Well...
Yeah, that was amazing. Thank you so much.
Cults.
I will never get sick of them. I don't understand how... I mean, I read the Kellogg book about the Kellogg creator. You know, there's like a battle between... I'm saying it as if you know. There's these two brothers
who
started
I know about the Kellogg's.
Okay.
Yes.
And they sort of kind of had a cult, but it wasn't as much of a cult as I had wished it was.
Yes.
And then I read a book about the Oneida... silverware.
Yes.
If you've ever seen Turn Over Your Knife and seen the word Oneida, that's sort of started as a religious kind of cult too. I'm just like
it.
Obsessed
no,
with all
I'm,
things cults.
I'm pretty into cults.
So
we might have to start a second
this.
Podcast on cults.
We might. I'm sure there aren't any out there.
No, I don't think the market is flooded with
I'm
cult podcasts.
I'm sure there
podcasts.
Aren't two women in their 40s doing a cult podcast. There must be a market.
Wait, do you think they drink wine? Because we could add that.
Oh my God. Do you think they have mommy wine time? Yeah. Shard of mommy.
I think we've got something here.
Well, guess what? Time for a break.
Yeah.
We'll be right back.
Can't wait.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First, he ruined Twitter. Now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
So we just learned how to survive cults, and now we're going to learn how to survive family secrets.
Man, my family's got a lot of them.
I know, right?
So I'm glad we've got her here to tell us.
I wish my family had more secrets, honestly. I know really too much, things I shouldn't know. With Julie Dixon Jackson, thank you so much for being here, Julie.
Thank you for having me. And by the way, all families have secrets.
Yeah.
And I know them all.
And you know them all. So that brings me, okay, so for those of you who may not know Julie from Never Not Funny, she's been a frequent guest. She is a performer, musical theater performer, turned genetic genealogist.
I want a little bit of explanation for me and the audience members who might not understand what that means to be a genetic genealogist. I'm so fascinated.
So, well, you'll in the story I have to tell you, you will get an explanation of how that happened.
Okay. Then I can sit tight.
You don't want me to? Okay.
Well, do you want to say what it is first? Or
genetic genealogy is using consumer DNA testing to find family members.
Okay.
And to uncover secrets.
I love it.
Right. Yeah. Well, so let's get into your story.
All right. So here we go. So I'm an adopted person.
Yes.
That is all you really need to know about that.
Okay.
So I was adopted, and I always knew I was adopted.
Okay.
In my early 20s, I was born in Australia. I was there till I was 15. In my early 20s, I went back there to visit and discovered that there was a new law called the Adoption Act of 1984 or something like that, which allowed adoptees to have their original records, their original adoption records and birth records.
Okay, because there used to be something called closed adoption.
There still is something called closed adoption. Okay. And in most states, it's still closed adoption unless there's a pre-agreement.
Meaning you can't get the information about who your parents are?
I believe that there are 6 states now in this entire country that allow people, human beings, to have their personal birth certificate.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, but in Australia?
In Australia, the laws changed a lot in the 80s. I mean, there's still, I wasn't allowed to have my birth certificate at that point, but I got my papers that said my mother's name and her parents' names and her address and my father's name and her siblings and all this stuff and what she did for hobbies and...
So did the parents who raised you, did they not know this information or did they not want you to know it?
That's funny you should ask.
Oh, boy.
All my life, I was told they did not know. Very recently, I was looking through my mother's diary and my birth name was in one of the chapters.
Oh,
yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
Family secrets.
Family secrets. That's not even the worst of it. So when I found my biological mother, so it was very, I knew her name. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I was in the U.S. She was in Australia.
Right.
So I knew what town she was from. She had a very common name, Price. I can say it because it's a public information.
Okay.
I called, this was in the 80s, so I called the international operator who got me to the information operator for this town that she was from,
okay,
which is about 40 miles from where I grew up, and I said, give me the number of anybody named L. Price, and because her name was Lynette Price, and she said, well, I can only give you 5 at a time. I said, okay, well, give me the first 5 and I'll call you back. Later.
Why didn't you ask for Lynette if it was? I probably did say Lynette. Oh, okay.
But they, you know, sometimes
maybe it's just listed as period. Okay,
exactly. And also keeping in mind that she's probably married and doesn't go by that name anymore.
Right, that's the other thing.
A big problem.
Yeah.
So I started calling, and I had no idea what I thought I was going to say.
Yeah,
if she actually
really?
Answered.
That's so crazy.
So I called, and the first one was nothing. The second one, I think. Unless it was the first, it was either the first or the second. This woman answers, and I said, I'm looking for Lynette Price. And she said, there's no Lynette Price here. My husband's a Price. And I said, oh, okay, thank you very much. And said, I did go to school with a Lynette Price, though.
Oh, my God.
And I said, oh, really? When was this? And she gave me the year. And I said, that sounds right. Did she have a lot of siblings? I knew my mother had, from the papers that I had, I knew she had 5 siblings.
Okay.
And she said, yeah. And I said, was she kind of tall? My mother was 5'9". And she said, yeah. And she did other descriptions, and it was in the same area.
Wow.
Yeah. So I'm like, that sounds weirdly, okay. Well, that's good. And she says, you know, you are calling from so far away. Why don't you call back in 24 hours? In the meantime, I'm going to run around town, see if I can find anything about her.
I love this.
What?
Australians will do that.
Yeah.
Really?
Yes.
This is so cool.
Yep.
Now you have a whole city in on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So I was like, great. I call back 24 hours later and she gets on the phone and she says, Julie, I have your mother's phone number for you.
Oh my gosh.
So this woman's father was the one cab driver in this town. My grandfather still lived in the town. My grandfather, Noel, he drove to his house and said, there's an American looking for Lynette. Can I have her number?
Okay.
And he gave him her number. She's in on the other side of the country at this point, in Western Australia. But he gave him the number, and that's it. Without even knowing why an American was looking for Lynette.
They're so trusting, these
people.
It was
the 80s.
That's true.
So I called, and she answered the phone. And said, and you know, just said, and I pictured like all her kids around her, I assuming she had other kids.
Yeah.
And it's Mother's Day, and like her face like goes white, and they're like, "What's wrong with Mom?"
Right.
You know.
Right.
But none of that happened. I said, "Is I'm calling for Lynette?" And she said, "This is Lynette." And I said, "I have some personal questions to ask you. Should I call it another time?"
Okay.
And she says, "No, now is fine." And I said, okay, well, did you have a baby on such and such a date? And she said, yes, I did. It's that easy.
Wow.
And I said, well, that's me.
Oh, my God. Yeah. What were your emotions when she said yes?
I don't remember.
Okay, mm-hmm. Fair enough.
It was very numb. It was very like when you're in the moment, like when I always think of like when I got married, I don't remember feeling anything.
Yeah.
Except that my husband's eyes were dilating and because
he was high?
I think he was trying not to cry.
Oh, okay. I just like he was stoned out of his mind.
No, I remember looking into his eyes and the pupils were like whoop. Yeah.
Maybe you were
and
high.
I was like, what is wrong with you?
My God, that's hysterical.
Anyway, so talked to her for probably about an hour.
And you're kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, what was her reaction to you?
She was very happy to hear from me. It was the whole thing was very smooth with her.
Okay.
And it was she had what was interesting was. So her father had called her and said, I just gave an American your phone number.
Okay.
She's like, I wonder what that's about. And her husband, little Irish guy, says, I say little because he's short. shorter than
he
her.
He wasn't a leprechaun.
He was not a leprechaun. Okay. Very close,
close.
To one. Probably
okay.
Related.
Yeah.
He said, it's that daughter of yours. She's looking for you.
Oh, he knew.
Wow.
They were together when she had me.
What?
Whoa.
They started dating.
20 years?
When she was pregnant with me.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
So she didn't keep you?
Let you
okay, right.
Yeah.
Well, right, because you see my trigger.
Yeah.
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 So, but she had just started dating him, so she was like, I don't know if I can raise. Was she very young when she had you?
She was 21.
Well, that's pretty young to me, but
well, yeah,
okay.
To me too, but not
those
for
days.
People outside of our scope of. Whoops, sorry.
Yeah.
So okay, so you must have asked her at some point, or am I getting ahead of the story?
No,
here?
I asked her, and here's the thing: you're very. I was young. It's good that I was very young when this happened because I was just, and I also had that adoptee fog mindset that I just want people to like me. I don't want to make waves.
Oh.
I don't want to make anybody uncomfortable because then they might reject me again.
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
So it was very much, oh, cool. Okay. And of course you're like, oh, everything. It was great that you did that. Everything
right.
is fine.
Yeah.
I had a great family. I've had a great life. You know, you
yes.
want to do everything
yeah.
to make
right.
them
the other person
comfortable.
Feel good. Yeah.
Yes. And she told me that they had decided together that they wanted to start fresh. And he and she just, I don't know, wasn't sure whether he could raise somebody else's baby.
Oh, Jesus. Okay.
Yeah. And at the time I was like, cool. Okay.
Right.
Sounds good.
Yeah. I didn't take it. I just kind of
didn't.
Well,
it's a lot of information to be given.
I dissociated it.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was a great conversation. Uh-huh. Very like surreal. And I made the connection.
Yeah.
So 6 months later, I went to Australia.
Okay.
I met the whole family. I met everybody in the family. And had a relatively cool reunion.
Did you feel a connection in a way that you hadn't to your adopted family, in the sense where you said you always felt like you didn't, like you felt like it was such a mismatch?
Yeah.
When you met them, were you like, these are my people?
Yep.
I'm like a little bit more, or
a little bit, mm-hmm. but not to the extent of this is my tribe.
Got it. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I think that is part of being an adoptee, is that you ultimately don't feel like you fit in anywhere.
You're not in any world.
Exactly, because mm-hmm. you don't have this history with these people sure. are related to you, but there's no history.
Huh.
And so it's confusing.
I'm sure.
It's very confusing.
I'm sure.
At that point, I was so overwhelmed by everything
I'm
and
sure.
anything my mother had said about my father. I was just like, put on the back burner.
Sure.
But she was basically said all he cared about was himself. He found out I was pregnant, and I never saw him again.
Oh, mm-hmm.
which
terrible.
Which tracks.
Yeah.
So that was it. And so I was like, I don't even need to know who he is. I don't even need him in my life. Blah, 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 blah. I was 22. So go on with my life.
Okay. Yeah.
I have done this. Blah, blah, blah. Move into my 30s. I get married. I start having babies. And suddenly, I have this. This is a pre-coming out of the fog thing. When I had my daughter, Mike, and I know you both know this, but your connection to them is so intense.
Yes.
And their need for you is so visceral and it's one
undeniable.
Of those.
Undeniable.
Yes, it's undeniable. And I was very much a hands-on. I did attachment parenting. We did the family birth. I nursed for a year and a half, blah, blah, blah. It was, and to a point where I think I had an unhealthy attachment to her because I was so connected. And this truly is the first person that I'd known from birth that was related to
yes.
me.
Yeah.
So
that's wild.
At that point, I started thinking about looking for him just to fill in that puzzle piece.
Okay.
Do you think also just the birth of your children, it sort of brings up that whole...
Yes.
It re-traumatizes you in
it
a way
does.
About your own
past. Oh, I was
past.
Completely re-traumatized about my own past when I had my daughter, especially.
It heals you in certain ways
yep.
to have children, I think, because you get to be parent in a way that you weren't parented.
Yes.
Right.
And you also have to relive certain things.
Right. You have to think about all the things that you didn't have. And yeah.
It's so interesting to hear it from your perspective.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I asked my mother, I'm like, can you tell me anything else about him?
Mm-hmm.
His name was, I'll say it, Malcolm Cummings. And I can say that because he is nowhere in social media and he's in Australia.
Okay. Now that's an Australian name.
Now that's an Australian
right?
name. Absolutely.
Right?
Malcolm.
Yes. Malcolm.
Mal.
Yeah.
And she's like, he was about, he was about like, I don't know, 5'11 and or 5'10 and had red hair and really cared about nobody but himself.
Ugh.
So my mother knew very little. My aunt Val knew a lot more, and she's the one who told me about the baby.
Okay.
And was just a lot more forthcoming.
Okay.
And I thought it was weird that she knew more than my own mother did about the father of the child. But
did
whatever.
She make it sound like it was a one-night stand or like it was a relationship?
It was a relationship, but it was one time.
Okay.
Apparently. So then I started doing the ancestry thing, the genealogy thing. Okay. Can I find him in electoral rolls? Because that's how I found... That's how you can find people in Australia. They don't have a census, but they have electoral rolls.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
So every 4 years, 3 or 4 years, you can find people in the electoral rolls where they were up until 1980.
Okay.
I was able to find her. I was able to find my family. Could not find him anywhere.
How weird.
You're like, so he doesn't vote either?
Yeah.
and it's illegal not to vote in Australia,
oh,
by
wow.
the way.
Wow.
Yeah.
Compulsory voting.
Yes. Absolutely.
So he's an outlaw as far as I'm concerned.
Right. However, there are some there is one specific state, South Australia, that does not release their electoral rolls to the public. Now we're in 2013.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
2013, 2014 was when I started to really dive into it. And I was looking, so I'd taken a DNA test, looked for the name Cummings, was nowhere to be found.
Okay.
I'm like, and at that point, I really didn't know what I was doing with the DNA.
Okay.
Truthfully, there should have been Cummings in my DNA somewhere in there,
uh-huh.
but there wasn't. I wrote this woman who had a very extensive tree, and I said, here's the deal. Here's who my father is. Mm-hmm. I can't find him. His mother's first name was this. I don't know her. And I think his father was this. I don't know her maiden name. I can't find their marriage or anything. Well, I had discovered the one person who knew how to navigate the birth, death, marriages in the state that they were from.
Was it the same woman that you had called earlier?
Prized by marriage.
No, it wasn't. That's hilarious.
That is crazy, by the way. Let's not gloss over that.
And by the way, I can't. Yeah,
her last name is Price by marriage, and she's just like, I just happen to have gone to school with the person with the exact name you're looking for. That's banana time.
Call me back in 24 hours.
Yeah, that happens to me.
I love that.
More than I'm comfortable admitting.
Okay.
So she said, I'm taking classes right now. I can't really hold on. And then all of a sudden she goes, is this what you're looking for? And it was my paternal grandparents' marriage certificate.
Wow.
How did she get it?
I was not good at that point. This is before I'd really learned how to research correctly.
All right.
And all of a sudden I knew my grandmother's maiden name.
Okay.
Brunt. Okay. So I started calling and I called, and this time I think it was the third phone call. I said, I'm looking for somebody who is related to Eileen Brunt.
Okay.
Her maiden name was Eileen Brunt. And the third woman said, well, Brunt is my married name, but I think I remember Eileen, or it was Arlene. Arlene, I said, oh, did she have a son named Malcolm, perhaps? And she said, oh, yeah.
Whoa.
I'm like, okay, I need to tell you what's happening right now. And I explained to her. This time I was very upfront about it. And then she directed me to call her sister-in-law, who was the actual Brunt, and to give me more information. And sure enough, that was the right family.
Okay.
They hadn't seen Malcolm in years, but he lives in South Australia. Last they checked, South Australia does not release the electoral rolls.
Oh, gotcha.
I found my sister, who had a slightly unusual name, and her sister was a friend of hers on Facebook who had another slightly unusual name.
Okay.
There was their brother. And then there was Kim, K-Y-M, who was their aunt. Was my father's half-sister, and there she was. It was all there.
Okay.
So I found them, and I was like, well, now what do I do? And I decided this, and he was nowhere to be seen. I decided that Kim would probably be the best person to reach out to.
Okay.
So I messaged her on Facebook. Of course, days go by. She doesn't know what message requests are, as most older people don't. And I was getting anxious, and so I messaged one of her sons and convinced him that I was a relative, and could he tell his mother to please look at her.
Right. Show your mom how to use Facebook.
Exactly.
Could you drive to your mother's house so you can show her on the computer screen what she's supposed to be doing?
Exactly. Yeah. So we went back and forth. He's like, she said she can't see it. It was a stupid comedy of errors. Eventually, finally got through it. We were texting back and forth. She's like, oh my God, Malcolm is alive. This is amazing.
And this is Malcolm's sister.
This is Malcolm's half-sister.
Half-sister, okay.
Yeah. And he said, this is amazing. I'm going to let him know.
Okay.
And I will let you know what happens. I'm so close. Yes. So I'm waiting. It's like, I'm like, how can this be taking so long? Does she not know how anxious I am about this?
Right.
What is wrong with her? She's lovely. But I... So a few days later, I'm like, hi, anything if you talk to him? And she's like, good news. I just talked to him. Here's his phone number.
Whoa.
I have his phone number. This is the second time in my life where I have the phone number of the parent that I didn't. So I call the number.
Uh-huh.
And he's driving, so they pull over. His lady friend had answered and pulled over. Okay. He gets on the phone, and he says, hello, young lady. And I said, well, hello. And the first thing he says is, I can't believe your mother didn't tell me about you. I would have taken care of you. I was in, I used to go to America and buy my cars and blah, 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 blah.
What?
And he's just going off and off and off and off. I can't believe this happened to you. And I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Nothing happened to me. What is happening?
Wow.
Suffice it to say, within a few seconds, so I grew up with a sociopath. I've been in a relationship with a sociopath.
Oh, no.
I can call a sociopath very
fast. Okay, gotcha, wow. gotcha.
Wow.
So he was pathological, and I could tell right
okay,
away.
Okay, well, that's good that you could tell.
It's good that I yes. yeah that I yes. grew up with a sociopath.
No, that's not good. I'm just saying yeah, I could thanks, see getting Danielle. Sucked into a relationship with yeah. someone.
Oh yes,
who,
I am very much yeah. intuitive and yeah. And I'm also a pattern recognizer because
okay, good. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Another thing that a lot of adoptees are is hypervigilant.
Uh huh. Mm-hmm.
And we read everybody in the room and we project what might happen so that we are prepared. For how to handle that.
Right, if the rug's pulled out from under you.
Yes.
Okay, so the guy's already on the defensive as soon as you pick up the phone. I would have taken care of you if I had
yes.
known about you.
Yes,
okay, right.
That was the first thing he said right. to me. He says that, then he says, the reason you couldn't find me is because the government won't let me be public.
Uh-oh.
And I'm like, what are you talking about? And he says, well, I'm not allowed to talk about it. It's top secret.
Oh,
top
lots secret. Of red flags.
But yeah, I'd be at a wedding and all of a sudden a helicopter would come in and I'd have to fly out.
Okay, we've seen this documentary.
Yes. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And I am... If somebody is BSing
this
me,
is your tribe. This is the people you could have been raised
I was
by.
Like, I was like, well, he's kind of an actor. I don't know. So he says, look, and I didn't want to piss him off because I wanted information from him mm-hmm, because yeah. I wanted the whole truth and I wanted to be able to do the family genealogy. I wanted to know what his parents' names were and I okay. wanted to be. So he said, all right, just, you know, go and look up Glomar 2.
Oh, no.
And so, it'll all make sense to you.
Oh no!
Is this like a QAnon situation? What's happening here?
It sounds like it.
Okay. Well, what it was? So of course I Googled Glomar 2. Glomar something in the late 60s, early 70s was a Russian. Of course, so the Russians were after him. Was a Russian nuclear sub.
Oh my God!
That Whoa. Had been. Either disabled in some way, and the Americans did something to it.
Okay.
And his story is that he was hired by the government to go and work on it to do what I don't
well,
know.
He's a mechanic.
He's a mechanic. Exactly. Yeah, this man yeah. who doesn't know how to use the internet.
Yes.
Yeah. He worked on these computers on this nuclear stuff. Yeah.
Glomar 2.
Glomar 2. Reckoning. Trust me, you okay. will be fascinated
All
by
right.
it.
So you're
so
playing the long
game. I had to sit there
con-ing.
Rolling my eyes way back in my head, hoping for some nugget of truth.
Uh-huh.
And 45 minutes in, and I'm like, I realize he has not asked me a single
right.
question about myself.
Which is super weird if you just found out you had
you
fathered
have a child.
Someone. Yeah.
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 And he's, and finally I said, so, anything you'd like to know about me?
Uh-huh.
And he said, oh, yes, when are you coming to visit me?
Uh-huh. Okay.
Didn't ask about my kids, didn't ask if I was married, didn't ask what I did. 6 months later, I have... I built the family tree out and back and down as far
yeah.
as I can.
Okay.
Using, with the help of some of the DNA, but not really, because it's not working the way it should work.
Okay.
So I'm confused. But I have discovered murder suicides. I've discovered all these
Love
things
it.
On different branches, which
yes.
is like my favorite thing. So I
it's like a, it's like reading a novel, but it's about your family.
Yeah, but it's about people
right.
that I'm connected to. It's cool. So I plan a trip to go back to Australia. I'm gonna meet him. I just want to meet him once.
Sounds like
say,
that's enough.
Yes,
yeah.
to say just so that I can be face to face with him once, then I can move on. But
right.
I don't. This toxicity is not. I don't need in my life. I was armed with tests while I was there because
gotcha.
Now I was really getting into the DNA thing. And so while I went to visit him in his house, I spent maybe 3 hours there. My sister was with me, the one who he talks to and
right.
she talks to. And she thought it was hilarious that she would follow us around the house. And whenever she was in the room with us, he would like go to another room because he didn't want her hearing the lies
uh-huh.
that he told me
uh-huh.
that she had never heard.
Oh, boy.
And and he didn't, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, right. His stories were not going to match up.
She was hilarious. She was laughing because she was making him so uncomfortable.
She was cognizant and like you don't have like a cult follower on your hands. Yep.
So we went through some albums, some family albums. The first one he showed me was just a big album of oil rigs. He apparently worked on oil rigs, but he was not in any of those pictures of said oil rigs, except for there was one where there was a huge fire and there was a silhouette and he said, that's me.
Oh boy, this guy.
And then he closes it and presents it to me like,
Here's your family legacy.
Yeah, I was like, why don't you keep that? So then he gets other albums out. Now, this time, there's family pictures. Okay. And I've done so much research on the family. I'm able to say, oh, this is so-and-so, and this is so-and-so.
Oh, wow.
People he didn't know.
Right.
Wow.
And there was a picture of him and my mother.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, oh, my God. So there was a picture of them on a, it was a facade of a plane, like they were going somewhere, but it was like a posed picture. So I now had this picture of both of my parents.
Wow.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
But he let me have all those pictures. Before I left, I said, oh, here, take this DNA test. He took it in front of me. He's like, whatever, I have nothing to hide. He accepted me wholeheartedly, but just as another person that he could like...
tell a story to.
Yes. Exactly. Got out of there, had an enormous headache, but it was like such a relief to like have done it and then get on with my trip. So we, Sharon, my childhood friend, came. We rented a car. We drove to the first person we went to was my grandmother's last surviving sister, who was in her 90s and lives with her daughter, who is my father's first cousin. And it was the loveliest thing. And she said, well, this is a great way to go out with the last, with a connection to my late sister.
Aww.
So she basically said, I'm so happy to die with this information having met you. It was the most touching thing, even though I'm like, don't say go out.
Yeah.
Did that. There was a, there was an aunt that confronted me and said, you have this picture in your tree. You're not. You have no right to that picture. And she was connected to a cousin who had contacted me on Ancestry, who had seen that I have this picture. And she said, I didn't own this picture and I had no right to it. It was my of a second or third great grandmother whose husband had attempted to kill her and committed suicide.
Oh, okay.
And the picture was in there, and she'd written me saying, you have no right to this picture, and you shouldn't put that out there. There are people in the family that still... It happened literally in
1903.
I was going to say, like 100 years. Yeah, it happened in 1903. Yeah. Okay. I'm like, it's kind of history.
We all have that, right.
We all have that, exactly. But so she confronted me,
Which
was very uncomfortable. Wow. But I was okay. And my had some cousins that I kind of bonded with. They're like, what's happening over there? Anyway... and it's New Year's. I get an email from 23andMe. Mm-hmm. My DNA results are in. I look at it. Malcolm's DNA results are there. He is 100% not my father.
I knew
it. Oh, my God.
No.
Oh, my God.
The sociopath is not your father.
Like, all that work.
Wait a second.
What? But also, yay.
What?
Also, yay.
But then you had bonded with this girl who's not your sister. Yep. And then all those people you saw
all
were
those
your
people. I outed the murder suicides. Oh, I'd done that. I shit talked my father.
They weren't related to you at all?
Nope. Not at all. Not one.
So what happened?
Think of all the dirty laundry you brought to the surface for them to work on, though, for the next,
my God.
You know,
to process
20 years.
Right.
But there was a picture of him with your mom in
this
book.
They were together.
So what went wrong? Did your mom name the wrong person? Was the guy who was her husband actually your dad? Is that it? The guy who said couldn't raise another person's baby?
So I immediately call her, and she answered. Actually, John answered, and I said, hi, it's Julie. Can I talk to Lynn? She answered. I said, are you in a place where you can be by yourself?
Because you've got some explaining to do.
And I said, why don't you go for a walk around the block? And she's like, all right. So she goes, okay, I'm outside. And I said, okay, here's a weird thing. Malcolm's DNA doesn't match mine. And she says, that is weird. that was as outraged as she was.
Yeah.
Like, that is weird. And I'm like, no, seriously, he is not my father, Lynn.
Uh-huh.
And she's like, well, he has to be. There was never anybody else. I didn't drink. I didn't do drugs. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't care whether you did or not, but there was clearly somebody yeah. else. And she says, it wasn't. I said, well, it must be John, Lynn.
Uh-huh.
And because they started dating. I'm like, maybe you had a miscarriage and then got pregnant again.
Ah, mm-hmm. Gotcha.
That would make sense. And are really bad at counting. I don't know. But she's like, I don't think so. But, you know, I don't know. I'm like, well, I'm going to send him a test. She's
okay.
like, all right. So I start building out his part of the tree.
Oh, Jesus.
Thinking, it's got to be him.
You didn't learn your lesson.
Nope. So I start building it out. It comes back not related to
okay.
you.
Okay.
Yeah.
So now I'm the Immaculate Conception.
Yes.
Yes.
You are Jesus Christ.
I am. Thank you. So I just start. And now it's infuriating.
Yeah.
That.
You just bonded with all these yes. strangers.
Yes, that I did. I spent all that money, all that time, all of that. And
oh,
she has been
God.
Just telling me all these years, this is your father, this is your father, this is your father. So I keep talking to her. I keep saying, think. Isn't yeah. there? Wasn't there? So she would tell me a story about a boyfriend. And it was uh-huh. always, but we never slept together. So I would, but I would be like, mm-hmm. who was, what was that guy's mm-hmm. name? Blah, blah, blah.
Uh-huh.
I would find that guy's family.
Oh.
And I would contact them.
and do a whole tree on them.
And I would send them a test.
Okay.
I tested two complete strangers.
Okay. And they did
that,
it.
That were, and they did it. That were connected to these people
yeah.
that because she had told me stories that I took as a clue.
Okay. Oh, you didn't test the fathers. You just tested people related to the fathers.
Exactly.
I mean, they weren't the fathers, but the guys she had dated.
Actually, one of the fathers I did test.
Okay.
Did I? Yeah, I think I did. I tested the sister of one of them because he was deceased.
You're going to have to just start going through her high school
the whole
yearbook.
Whole entire, yeah.
Well, it was after, way after high school, though.
Oh, right.
She was
21.
Melbourne, right.
Yeah, she was older.
Right.
I forgot.
I started, she worked in a hospital. She was a nurse.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, did she date an anesthesiologist? Maybe somebody knocked her out. And it was literally, I went through.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah. Got it.
It was ridiculous. Finally, I realized this is when I started getting into genetic genealogy. And I realized the only way I'm going to ever get my answer is to get a close enough DNA match.
Right.
That can put me there. So I started learning how to do genetic genealogy.
Okay.
And it took a year and a half to 2 years. Finally, one day, I got a 300 and something match, which is about a first cousin once removed.
Oh, okay.
And my mentors talked me through it and how to build it out and connect it to my other matches. And I got down to, I figured out which side of that match's family I was from by his tree and by my other matches. And I got down to, I'd what we call triangulated both of his great-grandparents in my matches, which means I have matched to that grandparent and that grandparent, which means I connect to both of those lines, so I have matches on, so some whoever I'm related to is below that couple.
Right. Got it.
So got down to one couple, and they had four sons originally, two of which were alive when I was conceived.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew it had to be one of the two of them.
Wow.
Gotcha.
Told him, told the match. He connected me with the son of one of them,
uh-huh.
who I then had to explain this whole thing to.
Oh, gosh.
He is probably the greatest thing that has ever happened to me in my life.
Oh.
He is the brother I never had. He is an amazing human being that is the gift that keeps on giving.
This is the son of your father?
Yes.
Okay. And we know for sure now that this is...
Well...
or he's just some dude.
Some dude. So I tell him the whole story. He says, well, I guess I'll just take a test.
Okay.
His father died in 2009.
Oh.
I'm lucky enough that one of my cousins has a bunch of books from my grandfather that he had transposed letters from my father to him into these books that mm-hmm. he had written to him all during the 60s.
Wow.
And she would take a picture of one and send me a page a day of these letters from my father. And the way that he
wrote,
I know, they are a gift. the way that he wrote was the way that I write. Very stream of consciousness and not taking yourself too seriously. But you know what I mean? Like, it was very conversational.
Wow.
That was a gift.
And he most likely had no idea you existed.
I'm sure he didn't. So we are now, I was born in 1965. I was born in 1965 and I was conceived in August of 1964, July or August of 1964. It is now April, May of 1964. These letters are still coming. I'm like,
whoa, it's
going. He's going to talk about my mother,
right?
Yeah, because he's talking about girls that he's going out with.
Right.
He likes nurses. My mother was a nurse.
Whoa.
He goes dancing. He's like, yeah, just. And I was like, oh my god, oh my god, I'm gonna, it's gonna happen. May probably is the last one I get. The next one I get, it's October, and he's on a boat to England.
Oh, for God's sake.
Oh, man.
What happened? It's like there's a hole missing.
What happened to June to October? Oh, my God.
Isn't that
God.
Crazy?
That's crazy.
Yeah.
The missing diaries.
The missing.
Dun, dun, dun.
So, and I'm, again, I can only hope that maybe.
But you have a relationship with Rob, and that's
lovely. I have
lovely.
A relationship with Rob. I have two other brothers and a sister who doesn't acknowledge me. She's exactly 11 months younger than me.
Ooh.
So he had knocked up his girlfriend after he came back from England and married her right away, which is why Rob is like, oh, if he'd known your mom was pregnant, he would have married her.
Gotcha. Yeah. Crazy.
So many twists and turns.
I know.
I love it
and
so much.
And you found a passion of genetic
and
genealogy
found a new
out
career,
of it.
Which I have a whole new vocation.
Fascinating.
If people want to use your services to find people, what did they do?
They can go to cutoffjeans.com.
That's your podcast.
That's my podcast. If you go there, it's my business, Cutoff Jeans Investigations. It's my blog, and it's a link to the podcast, which is Cutoff Jeans.
And it's G-E-N-E-S, of course.
Yes, Cutoff Jeans, all over.
That's amazing.
Such a great tale.
Holy moly. Well, we just can't thank you enough.
This
was a fascinating tale. I will be dreaming about it. I will be thinking about Malcolm. He's my...
Malcolm, not my dad. Malcolm, not my dad.
Malcolm, not my dad. Oh, my God.
Not her dad. Yes.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Julie. Thanks for having me, guys. I'm so happy to get to do this.
This was such a blast. Yes.
Check out our podcast, everyone.
Yes. Cut Off Jeans. And we will be right back with what we learned today.
Mm-hmm. Danielle.
Christine.
Are you ready to learn what we learned?
Yes.
Be aware that the very cult you are researching may own and operate the websites or sources you are using.
Right.
Watch out, your wine might be the product of a cult.
Like a vault.
Yeah. Cheers.
Manischewitz.
The Glomar was a Soviet diesel-electric submarine, K-129. It sank in the Pacific Ocean, 1,560 miles northwest of Hawaii, on March 8, 1968. The USS Halibut identified the wreck site, and the CIA crafted an elaborate and highly secret plan to recover the submarine for intelligence purposes.
I have a well, actually. It's sort of a well, actually. It was based on, I believe it was last week's episode, we were talking about Jimmy Smits.
Yes.
And I, of course...
Victor Fuentes.
Said he was Victor Fuentes. Yes. And then I forgot to say his character's name on L.A. Law. I mean, on NYPD Blue. And I drove home and I'm like, Bobby Simone. I just completely forgot to say it. So I don't want people to not think that I know both Victor Fuentes and Bobby Simone, because I very, very clearly do.
You know, I've been upset about that since last week.
I know no one cares about me, but I just have to say it.
I think a lot of people care.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people have Jimmy Smits feelings.
As always,
remain.
I was going to say, remember to remain calm. I don't know what I was saying.
Remember.
Okay. And as always,
remain calm.